Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 10:35 on a Friday morning. Time now for our weekly feature, Ideas Matter, checking in with the public humanities. Today we'll discuss active use and reuse of historical sites, specifically Great Camp Sagamore in the Adirondack Mountains. Joining us is Garrett Livermore, Executive Director of Great Camp Sagamore, which simultaneously celebrates its historical heritage while remaining in active use. Balancing these two presents a unique challenge in the maintenance and conceptualizing of a historic site. Garrett Livermore, welcome to the Roundtable. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here, Ray.
So, in many ways, Great Camp Sagamore, as it stands today, is really a living museum. I wonder if you could take us back to the very early days, and the history of this camp is so fascinating and so wrapped up in wealth and the turn of the century, Gilded Age. Tell us why it's a significant historical site today.
Sure. It's one of the best examples of Adirondack rustic architecture because it was built by a man named William West Durant, who in the late 19th century had been given charge of part of his family's fortune. His father, Dr. Thomas Durant, was the builder of the eastern leg of the Transcontinental Railroad, and he bought hundreds of thousands of acres of Adirondack land when it was a very remote wilderness. And William West went into the wilderness, found the most beautiful lakes and natural features, and then they created these incredible camps, mostly from the material he found right on site. So he built the main lodge, a giant rustic Swiss chalet structure at Sagamore, from the trees he harvested on site, from the stones that came there, and it became this wonderful place that you could get in, you know, when the cities were 100 degrees and sweltering, you could get up to the Adirondacks in a summer's day and be in a beautiful location and be as if you were on the other side of the world.
The story of Cornelius Vanderbilt taking the two-day train ride up and then the horse-drawn carriages going along the dirt roads and Roman candles going off, it sounds almost as if royalty had arrived.
Yes. Well, the Vanderbilts bought it from Durant, and they occupied it for about 50 years, and they made arriving at camp literally a celebration, which, considering in the early years, it took 36 hours to get from Grand Central Station up to Sagamore, which included getting your, you know, hitching your private car to a train, going as far as Utica, and then from Utica to Old Forge, the train tracks ended at Old Forge, and you'd go by a series of steamboats and then horse-drawn carriage into the forest, and you get to a certain point at the edge of what was then the 1,500 acres of the estate, where you were greeted by the staff, and they would set off Roman candles as you rode into through the forest, and then you would arrive, right at the lakeside there. You'd be whisked off the carriage and into your room. Your bags would be unpacked for you. It was, some call it Downton in the Mountains, reference to the currently popular TV show.
Well, you for 25 years you were in charge of a more traditional museum, at least in charge of education at the Shelburne Museum, and then vice president for education at the New York State Historical Association. This is different because it's still in use. And how is the camp used today?
Today it's used by people who come and, you know, they don't quite have the Vanderbilt experience with the luxurious elements, but you have this intact set of buildings that we've been working for 40 years to restore, and you come and you take classes or you just gather with family, and you're there, and it's still an extremely remote place. We're on over 100,000 acres of Adirondack wilderness. The core of the campus that Sagamore Institute actually controls is small. It's about 18 acres, but we're surrounded by the hundreds of thousands of acres of Adirondack Preserve immediately around us. So you can go, and we're on our own lake. You can canoe around or kayak around the lake, fish, go and learn how to play folk music or build a boat, and kind of enjoy it as it was meant to be, which is very different from the traditional museum experience of velvet ropes with a guide telling you to look at certain things and move along. You can be in this environment. You can spend a week, a weekend, or however long you want to kind of immerse yourself in the history of the Adirondacks and the Gilded Age.
Well, in a you know, in a sense, you have to be a think commercially in promoting this venue as a living entity. But how do you then balance preserving the historical importance and the museum-ish aspect of the whole thing?
Well, you know, before I took the directorship here, I was on the board for many years, and this is a discussion that we've had for over a long period of time. Because the traditional museum people will say, let's throw up some velvet ropes, let's start preserving things by museum standards. But if we did that, the institution itself couldn't survive because we were so remote that we couldn't get the number of people in the door that would support the base of operations. So we've been forced to do this other alternate means of a museum operation, and we do think about conservation quite a bit. How do we conserve the buildings? How do we, you know, what objects can we put out or not? But it's kind of what a lot of historic houses are going through now, because even in suburban areas, historic house museums aren't getting the level of visitation to support themselves. So we're kind of ahead of the curve, actually, on that, because by adversity, we had to come up with an alternate way of doing business.
Do most of the people who come there understand the significance of the place, and are they respectful of the things that you can't replace?
Well, I think the best indicator of that are the people who come to volunteer for us.
Mm-hmm.
We have three work weekends a year where people come and they open camp, they do restoration work, and they close camp. And these folks have been coming for, some of them have been coming for 30 years.
Hmm.
We have people who've come through three generations. They are very mindful of the importance of it and you know, are so committed to it that they will come and spend a weekend in black fly season repairing windows or painting signs or doing electrical work because they are so committed to the place.
So you mentioned black fly season. I take it you've experienced this.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, in
all of its glory.
Not a lot of fun, yes?
No, but there's lots of things you can do inside, and we've also discovered that if you paddle to the middle of the lake, you're beyond the reach of the black flies.
Aha! Uh-huh.
You can enjoy the environment and fish from beyond the reaches of our little friends.
And then move very quickly as you get back to shore. That's the trick.
Yes, yes.
We're talking today with Garrett Livermore, and he is the executive director of Great Camp Sagamore, which really celebrates historical heritage and is an active camp today. Now, you spent all this time, a quarter century, between the Shelburne Museum, the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown, the New York State Historical Association. So mm-hmm. all of that, quote-unquote, real museum work. Mm-hmm. And then you have this, which is something entirely different on a couple of different levels.
Right.
What do you enjoy more?
You know, I it's been very refreshing to be in a space and not worry about, you know, am I touching this or am I not touching that, because everything is meant to be, you know, touched and used. It leads to a new set of challenges, which is, if we use this piece of furniture, what's the lifespan of it and can we replace it? So we do kind of think about that, and things that are precious are kind of put away, but it's been an enjoyable. This is going to my third year, and I've been enjoying the change of pace.
What sort of things do you not put out for public consumption?
You know, we just got the Sagamore was owned by Durant and then the Vanderbilt family, and then for a period of about 20 years, Syracuse University owned it and ran it as a conference center.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 70s, they were downsizing and ended up selling the complex to the state of New York, which, because of the Forever Wild Clause in the Constitution, was going to demolish the camp. And in preparation for that, they auctioned off all of the furnishings.
Oh.
And we've been getting back little pieces, bits at a time. But last year, we got a set of the original architectural plans, working drawings, that a man who had worked for Syracuse University in the 70s as a graduate student and is currently retiring, in the process of retiring as a professor in a college down south, had saved these plans from being disposed of. So they came back. So those are precious to us, and those we're looking to get conserved and may frame or exhibit or hold in a safe place. But those are the kind of things we wouldn't actually put out.
What lessons do you think you can learn if you have never been, aside from the beauty, the exquisite beauty of the Adirondack Mountains, what sort of lessons does the average Joe take away from a stay there?
Well, I wouldn't discount the beauty of it and the historic nature, that you can come and learn about the Gilded Age, which is certainly something that's an active topic in history today, and how people lived, and you can learn about how the working people of the Adirondacks, the people who supported those great camps, had their own communities, and actually be in that environment. It's a very different thing. You can go and see a museum exhibit. You can go down the road to the Adirondack Museum, which has great exhibits on this. But it's a very different experience to be in that space, spend some time. You know, it's what history museums try to do. When I was at the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown, one of the things we did there all the time was, how do you get people to immerse themselves in a historic space? And when you're at a traditional museum, you may be there for a couple of hours, maybe a day, but you're moving through spaces. And here you're actually in the space, you're in the environment, you can see the beauty, you can see the course of the changing of the light on the mountains over the course of the day from early morning to sunset. And that, in that particular context, I think is an important history as well as a natural history lesson.
We're speaking with Garrett Livermore of the Great Camp Sagamore. Is it pretty much the same as it was, aside from the furnishings, which you may not never get back, all of them, but is it pretty much the same as it was in 1901?
It is as close as you can get in a historic environment. You know, without the what's really the change is the level of staffing. You know, when the Vanderbilts came to camp, they brought not only themselves, but they brought a whole cadre of folks who worked with them in the city, the chefs, the valets, etc., as well as the folks who lived up at camp all year round. Those people aren't there. But we've gotten back, actually, over time, you know, a number of the original furnishings. So in the rooms and things, it's pretty much the same. We don't have the same degree of William West Durant particularly was very fond of taxidermy, and had lots and lots of taxidermy. We still have some around, but not nearly the same amount as we did back in the day. But as from a historian's point of view, this is about as close as you can get, and it's kind of extraordinary. And I think it's one of the benefits of being in a remote location, because things change less out there. If this had been built, you know, further down in the Catskills or out on Long Island, there would have been development pressure that would have significantly changed, if not destroyed, this environment over time. But because we're so far away, we've been shielded from that.
Garrett Livermore, Executive Director of Great Camp Sagamore. We post each week's Ideas Matter segment and all of our segments on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Garrett, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you, Ray.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.